Good afternoon, Will.
Afternoon, Rohan. How you doing?
As always, excellent. It's particularly good weather today, so...
Particularly good weather? For no. You, it's all right. I'm being pessimistic.
You're being British.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the exam stress. It's making me all sad and miserable.
Oh, dear. Well, I thought you would have had lots of tips from...
Well, I have, and I've realised that I can definitely do things a lot better. But, you know, I think one of the key things that you need to take away from that talk was you need to give yourself the time to do everything properly, which, you know, we'll see how I'm feeling in a few weeks' time. But I feel like I don't have enough time to do that, really. But we'll see. I'm positive. We've got 2 weeks. And if listeners note a distinct drop in my enthusiasm in the next few episodes, they'll know why.
Yeah. Well, we hope we all wish you a very good exam.
Many thanks.
And but anyway, with that, we bring on to the fact of the week. Yeah.
Yeah. No one wants to hear me moaning about my exams.
The episodes are a lot shorter because Will has to go and revise now.
So. Yeah, but you know, I think. Ultimately, a lot of our episodes could definitely be cut down if we didn't waffle and get distracted so much. But I think if that were the case, they wouldn't really be our episodes, would they?
No, they'd just be like boring facts written.
Yeah,
no one wants that. Exactly. So what's in store for us this week?
Yeah, so what we wanted to talk about was basically what happened whilst we were at Oxford and Cambridge over those big summer holidays. You know, there's a big sense of, well, during term time, you're going to be busy because you're doing essays, you're doing this and that. But because the Oxford and Cambridge terms are so short, you've got about basically a 3 month period over the summer in which you could do something or you could do nothing. And I think to give young listeners an idea of what is available, we were going to just talk about what we got up to.
Yeah, okay. So I guess a good place to start is just acknowledging the fact that I had three more summers.
You than did. You. This is already unfair, but
yeah. So we can just ignore. I mean, they were quite fun, but I don't think they were as productive as my undergrad summers. So I suppose we can just kind of compartmentalize, and when we're scraping the barrel, we can talk about my summers at a later point in clinical school. But the good thing about going to Oxford and Cambridge, of course, apart from all the education, is your summers are particularly long compared to some other universities. So. I don't know about Oxford, but our Cambridge summers we broke up in mid-June, and then we didn't really go back until, I think, early October. So it was pretty generous summers.
Yeah,
really generous. Much longer than the 8 weeks summer holidays we used to get as a kid.
Yeah, and I think it's a level of freedom that could be almost too much freedom. You know, it's fine to... Oh, well, it's fine to just enjoy whatever you're doing, but you to have a 2 month or 1.5 month summer holiday, that's sort of a good time to relax. But when you've got almost 4 months off, you kind of do want to maybe do something useful with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is the idea of kind of just, you know, sitting out on the beach or in your garden reading a book or something. Like, it sounds really nice, but I think after the first week, you're probably going to be quite bored of that concert as a concert.
Yeah, and you know, the people at Oxford and Cambridge are generally quite sort of hardworking, quite high achieving people. They're often the kind of people that if they're sat around for too long, they start to get a bit antsy. And I think what one key thing is not to just work as if you weren't on holiday all the way through the summer holidays. You know, definitely get yourself out of your house, get yourself maybe abroad or to another part of the country for breaks. But also that's a really good use of period of time where you're not having to submit essays every week. You're not having to go to lectures every day, but there's something that you can pursue that interests you, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you, I suppose you can go first.
Having said all that, my summer holiday in my first year was effectively a long holiday.
Okay.
I think, you know, it was, well, I think I just sort of I'd been too much in the sort of school summer holidays kind of frame of mind to want to do anything useful with it. I was sort of like, you know, I've done my year, time to just switch off. And, you know, I enjoyed it. But I think I much preferred, you know, that's sort of more or less all that needs to go into on that first summer. But I much preferred my second summer, which was sort of half holiday, half research.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the sort of environment is like over at Cambridge, but at Oxford, there's a big drive, particularly amongst the sort of economics-related subjects, to get internships in your second year summer holidays, yeah? So there's a big drive for that. And to be honest, you know, most people might think, well, that might start around April, May. It sort of starts in October.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. So applications start going in October, November.
These internships, are that competitive?
For internships, yeah.
Wow.
It's very competitive. And it's so much so whereby if you're not really switched on, you can sort of come January, February, you can kind of be like, oh, I should probably get round to this. And, you know, not everything has gone, far from it, but there will genuinely be some internships which will be off the cards, off the table for you. So, you know, the sort of the PPEs, the E&Ms, the lawyers, they've all swamped the market in October, November.
Yeah.
Before, you know, us lesser folk eventually get to start thinking about what they want to do in the summer. So I had friends who I knew who were sort of spending more time making internship applications than they were doing their degree. Like, it was pretty crazy how much people could throw into this. But I think, you know, I understand it, because ultimately that internship is seen as that's your foot in the door for a job at the end of your degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're of the kind of person who wants to be a banker, wants to be a consultant for one of these big, enormous companies, and you get an internship, you know, at McKinsey or Morgan Stanley or Goldman Sachs, that's basically your ticket to a job, to their graduate employment. So getting that internship, provided you don't do something catastrophic while you're there, you know, provided you show that you can do your job decently, that's very meaningful. So I can understand why these are so valuable and so covetous. In fact, we also have something called spring weeks. Don't know if you know about spring weeks, but that's over the Easter holidays, where lots of lawyers in particular, I remember, so Easter holidays of first year, people were getting work experience. And so there's a big, big drive for this. Now, I, in all my wisdom, decided that, you know, it wasn't worth the hype. You know, there's all this sort of panicking and flustering around for these internships. I wasn't too, you know, bothered by it.
Yeah.
But I did, at some point, I made an application, because there are some internships run through the university itself. So there are obviously lots run by companies and you apply through the company, but there are some run that you apply through the university. So I eventually got round to making some kind of applications for those. To be honest, I've kind of completely forgotten what kind of jobs they were for or the kind of things I'd be doing. I just, at some point, I felt a bit, well, everyone else is making applications, I should probably send one or two in.
Yeah.
But what I ended up doing was I ended up doing a 2-month research project. Okay. And I was very, very fortunate to be able to do this, actually, very lucky. So basically, for experimental psychologists at Oxford, you're basically the last term of your second academic year, so the Trinity term or Easter.
Well done.
Yes, I've remembered. Would actually be the start of your third year.
Okay.
And as part of that, what you do is you spend time going around chatting to supervisors to talk about research projects. And so I sort of shortlisted 5 or 6 different supervisors that I wanted to speak to sort of talk about what kind of projects they'd do. And one of them was a guy called Dr. Manuel Spitschan, who worked in the Perception Lab. And at the end of our discussion, we sort of spoke a bit and he said, would you want to do a summer project? And so I basically said, yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, this all came about just by chance, basically. I could have very easily decided not to have that conversation with him and then it wouldn't have materialized. So, you know, prospective undergraduates, whenever you get a chance to speak with a supervisor, just do it, because you never know what could come out of it. And yes, so we ended up, we got funding. You know, I got paid to do this, which was really exciting, because so many people.
That's really impressive. Yeah.
So again, really fortunate. My college was really supportive as well. They gave me a month of free accommodation. So for half of it, they just put me up, and then I paid for the next month. Mm-hmm. And you know, this was all the while I had friends who were doing sort of unpaid internships in central London, that kind of thing. So it's a really good scenario. And basically, so we had, the project was to, do some, experiments on the way that the pupil behaves, the way that the pupil changes shape and size. As you'll know, you know, as you move from lower light to higher light, your pupil sort of adjusts to make sure that you're not overwhelmed by light, or if there's not enough light, to sort of try and let in as much as it can so that your eyes can make out as much as possible. Do you think, I sometimes gloss over things. Do you think that's enough for listeners to understand what's going on?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think the concept of pupillary reflexes, accommodation,
it's well known.
Reasonably well understood, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. So basically I was in charge of doing some modeling in MATLAB to start with. So, you know, computer scientists will say that's not really programming, but to me, you know, I was doing programming. And then recruiting in participants, getting them in, setting them up with some cool equipment, and basically just recording things. And yeah, it took about 2 months. It was the summer of the Football World Cup, where England started doing really well and people thought, you know, football was coming home. So whilst I was doing this, this was also happening. So there was an overall buzz of excitement over this summer. And
your research project?
No, not because of the research project. Sadly, I think that didn't quite...
capture the public's imagination.
No. Cup, yeah. Not as much as I would have liked. But it was great. I mean, so, you know, it was a really good opportunity to actually, you know, work with participants, do some research, think about setting up trials. You know, lots of stuff which I did do eventually with my own research project, but having been able to do that already meant that a lot of the things that I could sort of be aware of, I was already aware of. And, you know, it's because the Oxford and Cambridge summer holidays are so long. Yes, I spent 2 months in Oxford working, but it was a lovely 2 months, and Oxford is a fantastic place to be over the summer. But I also then had another month and a half, you know, to go on holiday. So altogether, it was a pretty good experience. And, you know, yeah. At the end of it, I could then say on my CV, you know, I've done this sort of research project.
I mean, 2 months probably sounds like quite a lot to the average listener, but 2 months in research just flies by.
Goes very quickly, yeah.
And did you manage to get anything, you know, publications or anything out of it?
So no publications. I mean, you know, we were able to put together what I thought was a decent set of sort of data, but it didn't turn into a published paper. You know, I think for a few reasons, what one being that not everything does end up getting published, sadly. But that would have been, I mean, that would have been a fantastic extra thing, right? To have a publication out of it as well would have been a really good extra. But for me, sort of, you know, the experience and sort of the things that I learned on it was enough, basically. So that was my second year summer. Obviously the third year summer, you've graduated, right? You've graduated and you're out into the big bad world. So I guess really you've got two summers if you're doing a 3 year degree.
Did you do anything as a bonus content? Did you do anything in your summer between like year 13 and university, your first year?
I went into railing.
Okay.
We're friends from school.
Yeah.
And I went, so you know, working very hard.
Yeah.
And I went on again. That was still that was more of a holiday. I think I'd, you know, at that point it was I've got my results. I'm into Oxford. I'll, you know, come October, we'll hit the ground running. But for now, I'm just gonna relax. Potentially not the best, you know, example to set, but it's the example that I've lived. So
that you choose.
There we go.
But I think that it's one thing to say that you should be productive, and you know, I'm sure parents would potentially want us to say something like, "Yeah, you should start early and prepare for university degrees." And I'm sure whilst there is some elements of truth to that, the level of intensity, at least in my case, of information that I had to assimilate, there's just no way I could have done that in a summer, because it just wasn't, I didn't even think that was possible.
Yeah.
To learn things so quickly. So I think it was better, definitely in my case, just to take a few months out and to actually enjoy myself.
Yeah, I think the benefits of downtime cannot be overstated. Mm-hmm. You know, I think particularly at that, you know, you're relatively young. You've got, you know, you've just been through A levels, which if you're doing four or five subjects can be a lot of work. And you know, you're about to then go into an Oxford/Cambridge type environment. If you just keep going straight through, that's mm-hmm. going to be super difficult and very stressful. So you know, it is definitely important to make the most, enjoy your holidays. I think that's key. And generally speaking, I don't know what it was like from Cambridge, but generally speaking, you know, certainly at Oxford and at Southampton as well, actually, professors and lecturers are quite expressive to say, really do have a holiday, really do take time off.
Yeah, we had the exact same thing. People were saying, you know, especially when you're going from your third year to fourth year in medicine, that the years of the summers are actually very short. I mean, they're still pretty, they're much longer than we get now as working professionals. But when you're a university student, we're going from 3 months of summer to potentially 3 weeks of summer.
Yeah.
It's very different. Yeah, interesting.
So how was it for you, like you said, once you got to clinical, the summer holidays themselves were shorter, but for your undergrads, what did you get up to?
Yeah, so I think I didn't really know. I mean, I wanted to be a doctor, so I just didn't feel like there was a big pressure on me to do these interns. I mean, they sounded like cool in practicing it. And obviously, you said that some people didn't get paid, but actually, I think most of my friends that did these got paid, and they got paid a fair amount of money. So that was always interesting. What I thought was, what I really wanted to do was to kind of explore all the opportunities available to me. Mm. So in my first year summer, I basically applied to like all sorts of crazy things, like polar expeditions to the Arctic, and and you know, some came through, some I was like, no, there's just no way I can actually do this in real life. But the one I kind of ended up choosing in the end was going to China. And you might think this is just like a very fancy holiday, but actually it was almost the exact opposite, which was, with hindsight, I thought I was very privileged to be doing this. But with hindsight and reflection, actually it was almost the other way around. But essentially I got a company advertised that they were looking for some teachers to teach English to students in Beijing. And I thought, okay, that sounds, I mean, I can speak English. I don't have any formal qualifications. How hard could it be? So I went there, interviewed. They paid for my flights. They paid for my accommodation. They gave us like some modest living expenses, which pretty much actually, if you were really frugal, would have lasted you the entire amount of your duration there. So, you know, it was pretty inexpensive, and the deal was you had to do, I think, 6 weeks of about 20 to 30 hours of teaching a week. So it was relatively relaxed.
Okay. And was it, could you sort of do that whenever you liked in the week? You had that kind of freedom?
Well, yeah, this is when it starts getting a bit interesting, because we were told initially it was pretty flexible. And when you get there, the first scary thing was they take away your passport. And I was like, oh my God, where is this going? Mm. But it turns out it was just for a security check, and we did get them back in weeks.
Well, that's always reassuring, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm fine to get put into some kind of camp or something. Yeah.
Wow.
But we were able to give, we were given relative freedom. They didn't like, you know, keep us in like a cell or something. Like it was very much the accommodation was basic. The teaching facilities were basic, but the schedule we could control. Essentially, there were like four of us. Well, there were about 24 of us, and then you were in a group of four. And then, as long as one of you was always teaching, then it was fine.
Right.
So it was pretty relaxed. And actually, I thought the teaching would kind of be a chore, but actually, that's when I like really fell in love with teaching because it was just really challenging, because teaching kids who speak only Mandarin and either very early in their English journey or even fairly advanced, but still quite, you know, nowhere near fluency. Being able to adapt to that was quite, I had to develop like a lot of like, you know, general skills, which I'd never heard of. Like, how do you keep someone who's 17 interested in learning a language, but they clearly don't want to be there?
So that was and you'd be in one lesson with sort of 17-year-olds, in another lesson
with six-year-olds.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, sometimes the kids are crying because they miss their mum.
Yeah, like, wow.
Okay. So, yeah, really, really different skill sets required, but really fun experience. And actually, the cool thing was the school did look after us, so they, like, put on shows. We were, like, it felt a little bit like you were, like, a celebrity because, you know, this is pre-Olympics. Like, China hadn't opened up to the world. And for us to be going there, like with people constantly like wanting to take photos with us and like pose with us. And we were judges of an international English competition. I mean, we had no qualifications, but our qualifications were, we were from Oxford and Cambridge.
GCSE English as well?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. So that was a really interesting experience. And at the end of that 6 week, I think it might have been 5 weeks, at the end of that period, they then arranged for us to go, essentially gave us like a guide who would then book all of our train tickets and flights. And then we were basically told we could go anywhere in China. So I went to Shanghai, I went to Xi'an, saw the Terracotta Army, etc. Yeah. You know, that experience also, I mean, it's amazing when you're immersed in a culture, you just pick up language so quickly that actually was enough to get around mainland China so I stayed there for 3 months.
Oh, for the whole break. Wow.
Yeah, and it just flew by. And it's very interesting. Like when you go, you obviously take away your toiletries and all of this, and over time, you slowly start becoming more embedded in the culture. So because your Western toiletries finish and your Western food finishes.
Yeah.
And when I got back home, I couldn't actually sleep on my bed because it was too soft. We'd basically been sleeping on like hardwood floors, essentially. So I had to slowly ease myself into sleeping on the bed again.
And were there? Was China the only place that you could go to do this? Or were there a few different options and China was just the one that you really wanted to do?
So there were a few different options. And you're probably kind of guessing what I did for my second and third summers was I actually went, kind of really enjoyed that whole experience and then tried to do that in other countries. So in second year, I went to Korea. Or in the year of my second year summer, I went to Korea. Mm-hmm. That was a completely different experience because Korea and China are really, really different. So Korea is like very Western, very developed. They were a lot more protective of their kids. We had curfews, which we didn't have in China, ironically. And in third year, I went to Hong Kong, which is, well, I would have gone to Hong Kong had I not missed my flight. So that was a bit of a washout of the year.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And so, wait, hold on. They didn't just put you on another flight?
No, I think it was one of those that because the organizer, so I mean, right now it's pretty easy to kind of, you know, get in touch with people. Back then, I mean, it wasn't impossible, but it just wasn't that straightforward.
It can't have been that long ago, Rohan.
It was about 10 years ago. Like,
people had phones 10 years ago.
WhatsApp was just about taking off back then.
Didn't the iPhone come out in like 2000?
Obviously, we had phones. But you have to remember, like, most of, like, mainstream, like, WhatsApp, emails, Google, all of these are blocked in the mainland China. So it does make it a bit harder. And if your organizers or your committee are over there, then they just... So it took, like, a day or two for them to, like, figure out what everything was happening because I'd been emailing and contacting them on their UK
Right. detail. Okay. And so you weren't able to.
I wasn't able to go, unfortunately, which was a real pity. But actually, it was 2012. I managed to actually get a volunteering job at one of the stadiums in the Olympics rounds.
Oh, okay.
Only for a few days, but it was still, you know, quite fun. So, but just got to experience the London atmosphere, which is really nice.
Why did you miss your plane?
It was actually the London Olympics. So there was a security. I was in a tube. It was going to take 2 hours to get from one end to Heathrow.
Right.
And it took about almost four. Ooh. Because the tube broke down, slash they had to stop it because of a security scare.
Okay.
At London Underground, which was a shame. But yeah, I really embraced the whole teaching thing, and I'd really encourage anyone to do it because I think it's a really good way to learn the culture of a country and experience it firsthand.
Mm. Now, because when I was doing my research project, all of the medics in my year were also doing research projects.
Yeah.
They had, so, you know, summer term ended, everyone else went home, I stuck around, and all of a sudden I saw all the medics were still around. And I said, what the hell are you doing here? They said, well, we're doing our degree. Was there any of that at Cambridge?
People who stuck around and kind of did research for it. I liked the idea of research as a concept and a principle. I think I just don't think I would be very good at it. I'm quite impatient. And, you know, I think people have this notion that you're going to be like developing drugs and finding cures and creating viruses are going to then cure other bacteria. And it's just, it takes years.
Probably not in an undergraduate project. No.
I mean, you're lucky if you can show like a link between one thing and another.
Yeah.
And I guess there's that romantic notion of research was broken pretty early on in my undergraduate degree. When I kind of just realized, you know, it was just, not that I was afraid of hard work, I just couldn't see myself having that level of determination and inspiration for it in the long term. I did apply to a few research things. One or two came through, but they just didn't sound particularly keen. One of them was on like something about the development of some fly. And I said, well, I mean, I'm sure, again, Drosophila is like this whole thing.
Yeah.
And everyone loves Drosophila, but I was just like, well, I don't want to experiment on a fly. Like, I want to experiment on humans.
But yeah.
That's inherently much harder and more expensive and complex. So.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's interesting because, you know, everyone says it's very difficult to be a medical student and things like that. And it definitely is. But I think in a way, it's very helpful to have your path. I mean, we talked last week about actually not ending up getting jobs. But that aside, you know, it's somewhat easy to have a path carved out for you. Obviously, you could say, well, you know, what if you have a lapse in decision and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
But I think what that means is, very much your summers, you don't feel obliged to do anything in particular, and you can do exactly what you want to do, which is, you know, going over to these other countries and learning. Whereas, you know, lots of my friends felt very obliged to do internships, because if they didn't, there was the concern that that would negatively impact further on down the line.
Yeah, I've not even thought of it that way. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, ultimately, if you're a medic, you're going to end up as a doctor unless you do something pretty bad, or the FPAS SJT committee have a bad year.
Yeah.
Although I understand they've now found jobs for all those 700 plus people, so happy days.
Yeah, so definitely happy days. But yeah, it is interesting. It will be who you know, right? I knew a few PPE people. So I guess that made me more aware of the rush to get internships. Whereas if you're, you know, in a subject which doesn't really do that, there's probably not so much of that of that pressure.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it was interesting. I don't know if you've heard about like the Mexican fishermen,
I have not heard about the Mexican fishermen.
No, do you know, tell the Mexican fisherman's parable?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Okay. So, I mean, we're getting very off topic here, but it sounds like we're kind of running out of things to say about our summers. So this is broadly on topic, but it's quite, I think about this every now and then, which is, what is the purpose of life? And, you know, some people may say, well, it's to it's to have lots of money, it's to have a big, a nice car, it's to enjoy myself. So the Mexican fisherman parable is essentially a very successful entrepreneur goes on holiday and he sees a Mexican fisherman. Well, I suppose it could be anywhere. I don't know why it's Mexican. But anyway, he sees a fisherman and the fisherman wakes up in the morning. He rows out a kilometer away from the shore, grabs a few fish using his fishing net and comes home and then just spends the rest of the day with his family. And this entrepreneur says to the fisherman, he says, essentially I could get you, if you were able to do this twice as well, I could get you a bigger net, or you could invest the profits from your fish by selling them and then get yourself a bigger net or a bigger boat. And if you keep doing that, you'll be able to get other fishermen and hire them so you don't have to do the fishing. But the fisherman, every time he gets, something like this, he replies by saying, why? Or, why should I bother? Well, why should I climb this ladder? And he says, well, if you do this, then you'll be able to, grow your fishmongering store. Maybe you can go national or international. Maybe one day you can go and have an IPO and sell all your fish stock in your company. And then ultimately he says, why? And then he says, well, and then if you have all the money in the world, or if you reach the ultimate end of your career, then you can come home to your loving family and wife and you can relax with them on the afternoon. And then he says, well, I'm already doing that. Why should I?
Yeah.
So I guess it's one of those, if you're always climbing the greasy pole, always trying to climb to the next level without thinking about why, then that almost defeats the point of it sometimes, right?
Yeah, I often think people, there's this mindset of, I have to not enjoy myself now so that I can enjoy myself later. I have to put in lots and lots of hours and all that kind of stuff so I can enjoy myself later. And I often think, well, wouldn't it be good if you could enjoy yourself now and later? Wouldn't that be a much nicer scenario? But, I think it all depends on what you value. I guess the fisherman and the businessman both value the same thing, but so they're two very different approaches to get it.
Yeah, it's one of those that if there is a mountain to climb, there are some people who want to do that, either metaphorical or literal.
Yeah.
Whereas other people would just be happy with where they are. And there's no harm about it. I guess what we're saying is that the difficulty comes when, if you're given a fun choice and a work choice, people currently may feel obliged to take the less fun, but air quotes, productive choice.
Yeah.
At the expense of enjoying themselves not just in their summers, but generally in life.
Yeah. And I think my advice to people would be, if you have something to do over the summer, which sounds really exciting and you really want to do, then do it. But maybe don't do something that you're not going to enjoy. Because it's probably, if you're doing an internship in your second year that you don't enjoy, the whole point of doing the internship is to get a job afterwards. So if you're doing the internship you don't enjoy to get a job you don't enjoy, then you want to sort of stop that sooner rather than later. There's always, I think, one good thing, and it's probably like this at other universities as well, but one good thing about Oxford and Cambridge is there is so much available to you. There's a lot of different opportunities. And also, like you said with your teaching, you're a desirable person. Right. For that company running the English language courses, you are exactly what they want. So if you want to do it too, it's perfect. It's going to work out really well.
It's just so good to explore all your options, right? Yeah, I was definitely a medic. No way did I ever dream that I'd be teaching kids who couldn't speak English how to speak English.
Yeah.
And that was great fun. But I had other friends who, one of them went to Tanzania to build wells. Another one went to Nepal to, help kids who are turning blind from cataracts, etc. So that, I think it is just, don't just settle for reading a book in your garden in your summers. Make use of them, because I still reflect on mine. I'm sure you still reflect on yours and say, those are good years.
And I think also being aware of what's around is really important. You don't want to come to June and then be like, I want to put something together for my summer. you're much better off sort of doing it earlier. And, you know, you can make applications to things and then not want to do them and just not accept them. Like, you don't lose anything by looking at things early, but you're just then, you're like, okay, well, I don't want to do any of the early stuff, but I do want to do this and I do want to do that, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that's key because I don't know when your opportunities closed. I think mine, I mean, they were relatively late in the year, but they were still, I think, you know, February, March.
Yeah.
Which is still pretty early.
Early, yeah, definitely. And I think given that you've basically only, if you're trying to do something in your first year summer, you've kind of only just started and you've got to start thinking about making new applications. Was there anything, I know your clinical holidays were shorter, but is there any advice for medics getting into those clinical stages?
It depends on the year. So, I mean, there's obviously something called the elective where medics are given the opportunity to, they are essentially expected to travel.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily need to, but it's a good opportunity for medics to travel abroad and really experience healthcare in a different setting, whether that's in a top territory, Western country like America, or in a third world country instead, or, you know, dig field medicine in somewhere like Base Camp Everest, or, I actually had an offer to go on a cruise ship, which would have been really fun, which couldn't do for logistical reasons. But, you know, those kind of things you just don't get to do.
Yeah.
Most people don't get to do as part of their careers. I'm trying to think if there was anything particularly exciting. So our summers were much shorter in clinical school. So I had a long summer between my third and fourth year, which, you know, I told you kind of fell through because of my flight, but still managed to have a good, useful time out of it. The one between my fourth and fifth year, I went to, I took a very long holiday with family. I went to Machu Picchu and did the whole Inca Trail, which is great.
Hey, cool.
And I can't remember what I did. Clearly not something particularly interesting in my fifth and sixth year, but, you know, it was only 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So it was just less. And then the final summer was the elective summer anyway.
Well, I guess then the main thing is in the clinical years, just give yourself the time off, you know, enjoy it unashamedly. You've earned it. They've worked you pretty damn hard.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not as, I think clinical school, at least for me, was less intense than, it's just longer.
Yeah.
Whereas Cambridge and Oxford, but the undergrad degree was very much peak, especially in Easter term. Like, it was just very full on hands on, whereas it does kind of level out.
Yeah.
Clinical school, it does feel closer to kind of, I wouldn't say a normal job, that's probably not the way, but a few less chaotic and less turbulent.
Okay. What is your fact for this week, Rohan?
So I had a, since we were talking about summers, I was thinking about stuff, what happens to stuff differently in summers. And
okay.
One of my summers, I actually went to France. So after I became a doctor, and a photo came up of the Eiffel Tower. And actually, I looked into this, and because the Eiffel Tower is one of these few structures that's made purely of metal, the height of the Eiffel Tower is about half a meter more in the summer than in the winter.
Okay.
So the tower essentially expands. And you might think, well, how does that work? But literally, it's not just the top expanding, it's pretty much everything below it expanding. And the engineers and architects had to take this into account when they were constructing it, which is just phenomenal. Because I would have just never thought of it.
But do you know if they then sort of have like rubber bits which can be compressed, or do they have that built into it?
I don't know. I mean, when they build things like, I don't know if you've been on like wooden roller coasters, for instance, ever in your life. They're not really very big in the UK, but they're quite big in America.
Okay.
But they're basically, the entire track is built out of wood, apart from like the final bit, which is metal.
Right.
The actual track. So the stuff that the track is sitting on is wooden.
Yeah.
And in the summer and winter, the roller coaster feels very different because of the expansion and relaxation of the wood.
Yeah.
And I think that's a similar thing to what you're talking about, which is you've obviously got a buffer. So if people didn't spoil off. I don't think they used anything like that in the Eiffel Tower, though.
So, but anyway, the view from the Eiffel Tower will be slightly higher if you visit in the summer. Yeah. You'll be able to see just that little bit further out of the lovely vista of Paris. Awesome. So mine this week is because of an interest that my second year project supervisor had. So he was a really good supervisor, interested in sort of perception, interested in the way that the eye works. And one of the sort of weird things that he was interested in, and he sort of told me that he wanted to do more research into, was something called the photic light reflex or light response. Basically what this means is it's not very well understood, but for potentially around 10% of people, they sneeze in response to light. So they, and it can be so sort of not severe, but it can be so strong that even walking out from inside into sort of a bright sunny day can just make someone sneeze.
Wow.
Yeah. So 10% seems pretty high. Yeah. But I think it's not very well understood. So it's definitely an estimate. But yeah, it's often in like labs, they'll make it happen by using like a man-made light.
So when you say labs, you mean laboratories? As opposed to Labradors?
Yes, in a laboratory.
The reason I ask is I've got a Labrador and she sneezes every time she comes out.
Ah.
Crate in the morning, and then she doesn't sneeze for the rest of the day, and I've always attributed it to allergies.
Okay, it could be light.
But then she never does it at night when she's getting into bed.
I reckon she's one of the 10%.
Yeah, maybe. is it possible in dogs?
So I have no idea. I think so what I had a sort of brief read up of it again, and it looks like it's some kind of hijacking of a cranial nerve which causes it, but it's not very well understood at all. The fact that it exists in humans, it absolutely could exist in dogs. I think in a lot of people, it's so subtle that you wouldn't experience it unless you were exposed to like an artificial amount of bright light.
Right.
You know, very often you don't walk from very dark to very light.
Yep.
That often. So I think for a lot of people, they might not notice that they have it, or it happens so infrequently that you just think, oh, I've just sneezed there. You know, you don't necessarily learn a pattern to it. But yeah, flash a big old bright light in your eyes. And if you sneeze, you have it. If you don't, you don't.
Wow, fascinating. Okay, well, on that bombshell.
Yes.
We're gonna wrap up. So next week, come join us where we're going to talk about what it's like to study dentistry at university. And if you have any questions or comments, then send them through to info@twobluespodcast.com.
So I'm actually quite excited about
UK. .co.uk.
UK, everyone. We're not in the States just yet.
Yeah.
Soon. But yeah, I'm quite looking forward to hearing about dentistry because I think, you know, often medicine is so often the highlight that I think dentistry gets sort of sidetracked a little bit. But I think it's important that we, you know, they are very different. They're not the same.
Very smart profession. Considering dentistry, yeah. You're the clever ones. Anyway.
All right, brilliant. Well, I'll see you next week, Rohan, and we'll talk about dentistry. Yeah.
Thanks, Will.
Awesome. Take care.